It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, we take a look at some of the top news stories out of Washington, including the congressional backtrack on a move to dismantle the Office of Congressional Ethics.
First, yesterday marked the start of Wisconsin's new legislative session, and it's a historic one. This term, Republicans will control the executive and legislative branches of both the state and the federal government.
With a lot of the voting power in the hands of the GOP, it looks like the state government will pursue an ambitious agenda on everything from transportation to concealed carry. Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss talked to reporters yesterday about his hopes for the new session.
Today also marks the beginning of a new chapter of history that we all get a chance to help craft. We are serving the state of Wisconsin during a remarkable time. In an age of great technological advances, with unified Republican government and the potential spread of federalism.
WPR Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson joins us now to tell us about some of the top priorities this term. Sean, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So we heard a lot of optimism right there with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Was that the general tone of this first session?
Yeah, I mean, the first day is always optimistic. The inauguration day in the legislature, almost without fail, is about new opportunities, new chances to work together, you know, big goals that are going to get accomplished. So, yeah, I think that was the general tone, although this year's a bit different than normal for Republicans, just because not only of the status of Wisconsin politics, you know, tilting in their favor, but just national politics.
Can you talk about the significance of this new term for Republicans here in Wisconsin?
Yes. I mean, there's sort of the usual significance. This is, for example, this is the last term before the governor stands for reelection, should he run for a third term. So there's, you know, there's going to be heightened scrutiny on the agenda that he puts forward and the budget he puts forward. But then there's this historic significance. You've got some noteworthy, landmarks that have that they're crossing this year. These are compiled courtesy of the Associated Press. Republicans will control both chambers of the legislature and hold the governor's office. At the same time, there is a Republican president for the first time in 47 years. Republicans have a 20-13 advantage in the state Senate. That's their biggest since 1971. And their 64-35 majority in the assembly is their biggest since 1957. So there's a whole lot of Republicans, basically, is the significance of this session. And it's from Madison on to the White House.
Well, and as you said, the speed bumps are gone in the road for Republicans in Wisconsin, and it looks like nationally as well. But here in Wisconsin, how much legislation does it look like Republicans are going to be able to move through the pipeline?
It's really up to them. There's nothing stopping them but other Republicans, essentially. So, you know, the thing is, for Republicans in Wisconsin, what they're going through and how they're viewing 2017 isn't going to be the same as Republicans are seeing it nationally. Republicans nationally have a lot of pent up items in their agenda that they want to take care of. They haven't had this single party control in a while. Republicans in Wisconsin have. I mean, they've been through this. They've kind of passed through that honeymoon period of 2011, 2012. They've knocked off a lot of these items in their agenda. And now they're getting into bigger stuff, new horizons, I guess. And you heard kind of a push from the assembly speaker over and over again yesterday, talking about long-term solutions, which is something you don't always get in the legislature.
We're talking right now with WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, talking about some of the top priorities for the new state legislature here in Wisconsin, which was just sworn in yesterday. And Sean, one of the bills last session that did not quite make it through, it did get some momentum, but it ran out of time, was a high-capacity wells piece of legislation. Do you think that one is something that could be toward the top of the list this time?
It sounds like it, and this is not necessarily one of those big long-term solutions that Speaker Voss was talking about, but when Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald was asked about his first priorities, this is what he brought up, and that is a high-capacity wells bill that passed the Senate last session. It would let owners of high-capacity wells repair or replace existing wells without a permit. and something that has been pushed in the name of providing stability to agribusinesses that use the wells, but opponents are worried it's going to enable these permits to exist in perpetuity in places like the Central Sands where lakes are drying up. So that's by no means an uncontroversial bill to start off the session with, but it is something that they know they could pass last session, so they're going to get right to it again this year.
And transportation, that's been a hot-button issue for a long time, and it's been one that has had infighting amongst Republicans themselves. What do we know about where that particular issue stands with the new session starting?
Yeah, this is looking like it's going to be the biggest argument, the biggest, you know, example of infighting among Republicans this session is what to do with the Department of Transportation budget. The governor proposed closing a roughly $1 billion shortfall in the transportation fund by delaying a number of road projects and then borrowing $500 million to take care of the rest. Assembly Republicans, particularly Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, have said that's not good enough, and that if that is the budget that the governor formally introduces when he introduces his budget, probably in the next month, that Assembly Republicans are going to have a real problem with that. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald has been more along the lines of where the governor is on this. But he did say yesterday there was some kind of an openness in his caucus to maybe cutting taxes in the general fund. So that's the fund that pays for schools, healthcare, and in order to kind of offset a tax cut or a tax increase, in the transportation fund. So that'd be like a gas tax increase or a vehicle registration fee increase. However, the caveat there with Fitzgerald was that he didn't know if members of his caucus could support it. So it was kind of a trend yesterday. Speaker Voss would talk about these grand, you know, long-term solutions that they're definitely going to reach this session. And Leader Fitzgerald would come in and say, you know, I just don't know if the votes are there.
Did you see that anywhere else? Any other pieces of legislation?
Yeah, another one that jumps out is another one of the Speaker Voss's top priorities, which is education funding. He wants to rewrite or at least make changes to the school funding formula in Wisconsin to account for the financial pain that declining enrollment schools or smaller schools are going through right now. It's something that is never easy to do, touching the school aid formula, because a change you make that helps one district in one legislator's district might hurt other districts that are represented by another legislator. And so you get into this fighting that's more along regional lines and along party lines. And, you know, essentially that's what Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald pointed out in his little press conference with reporters yesterday, was that that's going to be really hard to do. I mean, he did everything but say that that's impossible.
Any word in that conversation, what you heard yesterday about school choice, that issue?
They didn't talk much about school choice, but you know that given the big Republican majorities here, given a choice-friendly administration in Washington now, that something's going to happen. It's just kind of a matter of what to what degree they expand choice in Wisconsin. So they didn't get into that yesterday, but you can bet there's going to be something dealing with voucher schools in the governor's budget.
Well, let's turn now to higher education. And there has been a rather tense relationship between the UW and the state legislature in the past year or two. And does it look like those tensions, which began over a big funding cut, does it look like those tensions will be easing up at all?
I think a lot is going to depend on what the governor's budget looks like. I mean, he sort of sets the table in any sort of these discussions when it comes to dollar figures. The UW has asked for about a $43 million increase in its state funding over the next two-year budget. Compare that to the last budget when they were cut by $250 million, and really over the last five out of the last six budgets when they've seen their state funding cut. The strongest word on that came from Leader Fitzgerald yesterday, who said, I don't think we should necessarily just increase their funding because they were cut last time around. He wants to take a fresh look at the UW's budget, including what they're getting from federal funding, research funding, tuition funding, and changes that the regions have made.
So it sounds like that is not a sure thing going forward. And Sean, as we wrap up, Democrats are in the minority in the state legislature. But what did they say yesterday? Did you get a sense of what kind of presence they might have?
They are in the minority to the degree that it's going to be very hard for them to influence anything at the Capitol. And we could have said that really any of the last several sessions, but I think it's more true today than it ever has been with Republicans running things in Washington now. I think Democrats are looking for a message that's going to work. They want to be, typically when you have single party control and when one party controls the White House, it can be good for the other party. So Democrats have to kind of be that alternative. And so they're looking for a message that works, and the signals that they've given so far are that they want to try to focus on, financial issues where government is affecting people's pay, basically, or, their quality of life. So they're going to try to hone that message because they're not going to be really able to hone any legislation.
Sean, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson. He was with us there to talk about some of the top priorities for the new state legislature, which was sworn in yesterday.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up in November, a federal panel ruled that Wisconsin's current legislative district maps are unconstitutional. Now, two former state lawmakers, a Democrat and a Republican, are making an urgent call for those maps to be redrawn.
Right now, Congress began its new session yesterday, and there was quite a bit of chaos when Republicans had to rescind their vote to seriously curtail the independence of the Office of Congressional Ethics.
New data shows that there are slightly more conservatives than liberals in America today, and that white Democrats are more liberal than ever.
And Megyn Kelly is making a big career move that could be a sign of things to come for the media and the new administration. Harry Enten is with us now. He's senior political writer and analyst for 538.com. Happy New Year, Harry.
Happy New Year to you all out in Wisconsin.
Well, it's a cold day in Wisconsin, and I have to imagine for a lot of people in Congress, it was a cold day yesterday because the first day of the 115th Congress was far from business as usual. The day before, House Republicans voted to put the Independent Office of Congressional Ethics under a partisan House Ethics Committee. And was that a surprise, Harry?
I think the whole thing was kind of surprising. I during this campaign, I think if anything, the message from the voters was that they thought that Washington was a swamp and that they wanted Republicans to take power insofar as to clean it up. And I don't think that they were thinking that the way that they would clean it up was by putting one of the lone independent voices to check whether people were being ethical or not back under a partisan tent. And that was exactly what House Republicans did. But perhaps even more surprising than that was how quickly that they reversed course. Part of that was Donald Trump saying this isn't the time for that. Part of that was House Democrats saying, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? This is an office that was created back in 2008. So we had some independent voices to check on ethics in Washington. And so, the fact that they put it up for discussion and then reversed so quickly was something quite unusual.
So when they proposed it and voted on it, what did they say the move was meant to accomplish?
Well, this was the interesting thing, was that the vote occurred in private. It was among House Republicans only. And, it wasn't a unanimous vote among House Republicans, but it was, it was one that was at least a fairly wide margin. And they were kind of coy on exactly what was going on, why they exactly did it. Now, one of the reasons that they say that they did it was that they complained that this anonymous or this independent committee allowed for anonymous tips to be handed off. So that you could say, hey, this guy has had an ethics problem, and you wouldn't actually have to put a face to who lodged that complaint, which allowed for some vindictive behavior supposedly among House members who didn't like another House member. But overall, it seemed that the independent committee was working fairly well. So, this was a thing where one person brought it up and then a bunch of people agreed to it, but it was by far from being the majority of the House. It was just a majority and certainly not all of House Republicans.
Well, and what did fellow Republicans who disagreed with the move have to say, especially after those that put it in place had to roll it back?
Well, a lot of them, it was interesting. You had some people who would say, this was a private vote and I'm not going to discuss it. And then there were other people clearly who were not fans of this who said, I did not like this. This is not the thing that we should be doing. And it was those people who probably voted against it, while the people who said this was a private vote who probably voted for it, if we're reading between the two lines.
So we don't know, unless people came out and said how they voted, we don't know who voted thumbs up, thumbs down on it.
We have no idea how they voted. It was an anonymous vote, which I think is, as I said at the beginning, is exactly the opposite of what I think most Americans who voted in the Republicans expected, that they wanted more, if anything, more transparency, and they wanted to, quote-unquote, clean the swamp, which was what Donald Trump was saying all along. And this type of move, I think, to most people, smelled of something entirely different.
So it was certainly blowing up all over social media when they made this move. Do you think public outcry, public response, public contact with their representatives had something to do with the rollback?
Yes. There were numerous people who said that, in fact, it did have something to do with the rollback. And I think one of the key things that was different, say, from this effort versus perhaps other efforts where, you know, you try and get congressmen to reverse their votes, is that there were a lot of phone calls that were made to these congressional offices. It didn't just take place on social media. It wasn't just a bunch of angry people tweeting. It was people actually calling in. And what we know is that those calls into offices are actually far more successful at getting congressmen and congresswomen to reverse course or change their position than going after them on social media.
So an interesting footnote is that Jack Abramoff, the disgraced former lobbyist whose felony crimes actually helped lead to the creation of the Independent Office of Congressional Ethics, criticized the vote, telling Politico the move was, quote, exactly the opposite of what Congress should be doing. That seems like a pretty interesting slap on the hand to get.
I would say it's a very interesting slap on the hand. And indeed, you know, Jack Abramoff, who went to federal prison, who's an ex-felon, for what he did before the 2006 election, knows, and perhaps the people who were associated with Jack Abramoff know, that how big of a deal ethics can be to the American voter, because indeed one of the big reasons why Republicans lost power in the 2006 midterm elections was that a dozen or so congressmen were tied directly to Abramoff and his scandal. And that, in fact, was one of the large reasons that Republicans lost the House that year. And I don't think Republicans are so interested in giving up power so quickly in the House, given that they've now have control of all three branches for the first time in a little bit over a decade.
So speaking of slaps on the hand, President-elect Trump tweeted that while he agrees that this office is not necessarily fair, that this was not a priority that Congress should be taking on. Is he the one that comes out the winner in this?
I think that he certainly comes out smelling better than House Republicans did. And I would note, of course, that Trump wasn't saying he necessarily disagreed with the motive for the move or the move itself. He just disagreed with the timing of it. So this is something that might be brought up again in the future, perhaps when there's other news going on. So I don't think that this is the end of trying to rein in the independent commission. I just think it's going to be at a different time. But yeah, I would say Trump certainly came out ahead. I will say that House Democrats have to be quite upset over this, insofar as that they were barking from the trees that this is not a good thing, that this is a bad thing. I can't believe House Republicans are doing it, but very few people are talking about the House Democrats. Most people are talking about how Trump differed from the House Republicans.
Talking with Harry Enten right now, he's senior political writer and analyst for 538. And Harry, new data from Gallup shows that while there have been more Americans who identify as conservative than liberals for over a century, that gap's narrow and the numbers are getting closer. How do you see that squaring with a House of Representatives, Senate, and White House, as well as growing numbers of governorships and state legislatures that are dominated by Republicans?
Yeah, you know, Gallup has been taking this data for a while, and if you go back to the beginning of this century, back to 2000, we've always seen that conservatives outnumber liberals, but now, as you said, the gap is closed. What's really going on isn't so much that voters, conservatives are necessarily, or conservative Republicans are becoming liberal. What's going on is, if you look at Democrats in particular, we see in their ranks we now have more self-identified Democrats identifying as liberal and fewer identifying as either conservative or moderate, which means we're seeing increased polarization. Republicans are staying conservative while Democrats are becoming more liberal. So it's not as if the voters in the middle of the aisle are becoming more liberal. It's that Democrats themselves, Democratic voters, are becoming more liberal. And I think that's how you square the idea that Republicans are winning. It's just that Democrats are becoming different in their own makeup.
And there's been big news in the world of media and news that came out yesterday from Megyn Kelly.
Finally tonight, a personal and professional note from me to you. After more than a dozen years at Fox News, I have decided to pursue a new challenge. This was a tough decision for me because I love this show, our staff, my crew, my colleagues here at Fox, and you, all of you.
So Megyn Kelly said that she's leaving Fox to go to NBC, where she'll host a daytime show and a weekend news magazine. What do you make of that, Harry?
Well, you know, Megyn Kelly was perhaps more of a newsmaker in terms of the presidential campaign the previous 2 years than any other member of the media. Remember, she and Donald Trump had their own tiff. Trump said some things about her, which I won't repeat on the air, which didn't strike me as necessarily appropriate. But, you know, Megyn Kelly was a member of Fox News, which has long been the network preferred by conservative voters. And so the idea that Kelly is leaving, I think, suggests a few things. Number one, perhaps, and I'm not in Megyn Kelly's mind, that she was uncomfortable with what was going on in Fox News. But more than that, I think it points out that Fox News itself is losing someone who would perhaps be more critical of the Trump administration. Remember, directly on after Megyn Kelly is Sean Hannity, who is anything but. And I think this is yet another illustration of the polarization that we see, is that, you know, liberal stations have liberal anchors and conservative stations have conservative anchors who would be big fans of the incoming Trump administration. And if you're not a big fan of Trump, you're probably not going to be on the prime time in Fox News. And that's exactly what seems to have happened here. Again, not knowing specifically why Kelly did exactly what she did. But I think it's just an illustration of our larger news media, that conservatives are watching one set of news stations and liberals are watching a separate set of news stations.
Well, and since Greta Van Susteren had left Fox before Megyn Kelly, that now leaves them without a prominent woman anchor as well.
Yeah, that does. Now, it's going to be interesting who exactly replaces Megyn Kelly. We don't know exactly who it is yet. We know Roger Ailes was talking about Trish Regan perhaps replacing Megyn Kelly, but obviously Ailes is no longer with Fox News. So this is a real problem if you're Fox News, insofar as that you have a growing age and audience, a conservative audience, and you don't really have these younger female voices really being able to talk about the issues. It's going to be interesting to see if Fox News decides to try and bring in a woman, or whether they're going to have a completely male lineup, which is something very much unlike the other cable networks in 2017.
Harry, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
Harry Enten is senior political writer and analyst for 538.com and joined us to take a look at some of the national political stories of the past week.
Coming up after the news, two former state senators, one a Republican and the other a Democrat, are calling for Wisconsin's district maps to be redrawn immediately. We'll get the details. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources recently came up with new ways to temporarily relieve a budget shortfall, including raising fees for hunting and fishing licenses. We'll talk about the alternatives and what they could mean for outdoor recreation here in Wisconsin.
First, two former state senators, one a Republican, the other a Democrat, say it's urgent that the U.S. District Court redraws Wisconsin's legislative maps.
This follows in the wake of a recent federal ruling that the state's current Republican-drawn district maps are unconstitutional. This was the first time a federal court rejected a legislative map on grounds that it discriminated against voters' rights.
Tim Cullen is former Democratic Majority Leader of the Wisconsin Senate. Senator Cullen, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be on.
And Dale Schultz is former Republican Majority Leader of the Wisconsin Senate. Senator Schultz, good to have you with us as well.
Well, I'm honored as well.
Senator Schultz, let's start with you. Why are you and Senator Cullen calling for an immediate revision of the state's legislative maps?
Because what the courts have said is that we have a unconstitutional redistricting plan in Wisconsin right now. And it seems to me that we have an obligation, a responsibility to make sure that there is no chance that another election will be held using those unconstitutional districts.
And Senator Cullen, you and Senator Schultz are both former senators and majority leaders, but from different parties. What prompted the two of you, a Democrat and a Republican, to unite in this call to get rid of the current Wisconsin legislative map and as soon as possible?
Well, because gerrymandering, by its nature, is the abuse of power. And in some states across the country where the Democrats had total control, they've abused the power there. And in Wisconsin, it happens to be the Republicans are in control, and they abused the power here. It is not right that a bunch of legislators get to sit in Madison and draw a map that guarantees themselves a job for the next 10 years. That's exactly what they did. I don't think very many listeners had that kind of situation where they work.
And Senator Schultz, what did the federal district court say in their November ruling that are problematic with the current district maps, and why do they need to be redone?
Well, I think that, as a result of the trial, they determined that the actions of the majority party were egregious, and they bought into the standard of an efficiency gap, which is a measure of how gerrymandering or gerrymandered a set of districts is, and they have said we believe that constitutes unconstitutional mapping, and they're clear. And now that we know that the decision will be appealed, and all these things take time, it's, I think, essential that we begin the process to, draw district maps so that, people aren't forced to undergo another election with districts that are clearly unconstitutional.
And Senator Schultz, these legislative maps were drawn by Republican leaders in 2011. What was the process that they went through to draw them then?
Well, the first thing that you need to know is that the maps were drawn basically in secret in the law firm across the street from the state capitol. And the access that individual legislators had was, virtually non-existent. People were shown their districts and nothing else prior to, the vote for the map. And it was only afterwards that analyses of the district map showed how egregious they were. The fact of the matter is I voted for the plan, and it's not something that I'm particularly proud of. I understand that gerrymandering in the past, may have entered in a little bit into district maps, but as time has gone by, this has gotten more and more egregious. And it's the kind of thing, as Senator Cullen pointed out, that makes people very, very angry. And you have to be absolutely brain dead not to realize that it doesn't matter whether people voted for the president-elect or they voted against him. They believe the entire process is corrupt, and that the politicians and lobbyists in Washington are so entrenched that they can't get rid of them. So I would suggest if you want to drain the swamp, you should join this effort at the FairElectionsProject.org and see what's going on and get involved, because this is a chance to give our elections back to the people.
What prompted the redistricting in 2011, where did the impetus for that come from?
Well, go ahead, Tim.
Well, after every census, every 10 year census, by law, the legislature must redraw the maps to make sure, among other things, that there's equal number of people in each district. Prior to 2011, if you went back to 2001, 1991, 1981, 1971, 1961, we always had split government in Wisconsin. In other words, neither party controlled the governorship and both houses. For all those 50-so years, we had split government. And when you have split government, you won't end up with gerrymandering because one party won't let the other party do it. And so what usually happened during most of that time was a federal judge drew the maps. They drew the maps for in 1981, 91, and 01. And a federal judge doesn't have a political stake in it, so they drew pretty fair maps. So the thing was, the citizens of Wisconsin had no experience of seeing what a really true gerrymander looked like until 2011. And I think it's taken a couple of years for people to have really sink in how bad it is, how much it makes your vote not matter. In a gerrymander, you create a 70-80% district favoring one party or the other. In that situation, it really doesn't matter. You can skip you can skip voting in that election, and the result is going to be is known. Result's been known since the day the map was drawn, and that's what the court said. Is it devalues the importance of a citizen's vote when you are stuck in a gerrymandered district, whether it's gerrymandered for Democrats or Republicans. And what they did in Wisconsin is they gerrymandered a majority of the districts to help Republicans keep their seats, and then stuffed all the Democrats into a smaller minority number of districts. If you're a voter at either side, in most all but 10 or 15 of the 99 assembly seats, the races were decided when the maps were drawn.
We're talking right now with former Democratic Majority Leader of the Wisconsin Senate, Tim Cullen, and Dale Schultz, former Republican Majority Leader. They say that the current district maps prevent each citizen's vote from carrying equal weight and are calling for the new districts to be drawn immediately. Now, Senator Cullen, what was the Democratic response to these new maps in 2011? Did they try to raise an alarm?
Well, we complained, but it didn't matter. The Republicans had the votes. They drew them in secret, as Dale indicated. And the first time we saw them was when the bill was introduced, and then they ran the bill through in about a week. So we spoke against it. We argued against it and sat down and lost. So we made the point. But like I said, the public, Wisconsin, had no history of this kind of a gerrymander. So it was hard immediately to get people's attention. To a lot of people, it looked like, well, this is what the politicians always do in Madison, so this is what, don't worry about it, the politicians did it. But once they saw, for example, the 2014 election, where what ought to happen if there's no gerrymandering is how the top of the ticket elections go. In other words, the governor's race in 2014. In 2014, Governor Walker won re-election with a relatively narrow majority of about 52%. So if there was no gerrymandering, the legislative district results ought to have reflected that statewide sentiment that was there for the governor. And you should have had a slight tilt of the legislature towards Republicans. The statewide race for governor was 52%, so probably the Republicans in a non-gerrymandered situation probably would have a slight majority. But rather than having a slight majority, they ended up with a 63-39 majority in the state assembly. And that's a direct result of gerrymandering.
In the op-ed piece that the two of you co-authored, you say that voters should choose their elected officials, not the other way around. Senator Schultz, how do you see the impact of this type of districting, as you call it, gerrymandering, on voters and on democracy?
Well, one of the things that's most clear to both Tim and I as we go around talking about this in our state is that people are really concerned about the extreme partisanship, which has sort of, begun to dominate our political process. When you have unfairly drawn districts and competition decreases, and the only election then that matters is the primary, and that means that any politician who's in office quickly realizes that the only election they have to worry about is that primary. And when the leadership comes around and says, stick with the team and you'll be all right, we'll spend enough money to get you reelected. And then, you know, people tend to adhere to a party line, and partisanship then trumps patriotism. And I think it's time that we rise above partisanship and recognize that as citizens, we have an obligation to the whole country. And that, to me, is patriotism. And to me, that's one of the biggest impacts of gerrymandering, is that it spurs on excessive partisanship, which in the end means nothing gets done.
We're talking about how electoral districts have been drawn in Wisconsin and the impact on elections. Tim Cullen, former Democratic Majority Leader of the Wisconsin Senate, and Dale Schultz, former Republican Majority Leader, both say the current district maps prevent each citizen's vote from carrying equal weight.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234 or on the Central Time Facebook page. What do you think about the way Wisconsin's legislative maps are drawn? Do you feel that your vote counts, and is the system fair? And if not, what do you think should be done to fix it? Our number is 800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@WPR.org.
We'll continue this conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're talking about how a 2011 redrawing of the state's district maps is impacting elections. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with former state senators Cullen and Schultz that Wisconsin's legislative maps should be redrawn and as soon as possible? And how do you think the current maps impact state elections? What is at stake here? Our number is 800-642-1234. And you can tweet us at Central Time WPR.
Right now, we're picking up the conversation with former Republican State Senator Dale Schultz and with former Democratic State Senator Tim Cullen. Both were majority leaders of their parties in the Wisconsin Senate, and both say it's urgent to redraw the state's electoral maps. And let's go to the phones and bring Tom in Platteville into the conversation. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I agree with both of the speakers that are talking today, and I want to add one other problem that gerrymandering causes, and it causes extremism. Extremism becomes normal and becomes mainstream. In this case, in Wisconsin, it's the Republican Party. The extreme elements, there's no compromise, there's no need to, because you're safe. So you hear these state elected officials say and do outrageous things, and normally they would be called and checked on, but there is no check because they're in a district that they're going to win 70% regardless of what they say. So they want to say the most extreme thing for that right-wing base, in this case in Wisconsin, can be reelected.
Thanks for that call, Tom. Senator Cullen, would you like to respond?
He said it better than I could. And if you went to Rhode Island, where the Democrats gerrymandered the place, all of his comments would exactly apply, or just would apply to the Democrats. The Democrats in Rhode Island control 93% of the seats in the state assembly, even though they're statewide, they're about a 55% majority. So this is why this is about power. And it's so obvious that if you go to Madison now and from a safe seat, safe Republican seat, and you get caught even having lunch with a Democrat, let alone co-sponsoring a bill with them, you just caused yourself trouble with your majority party, which could lead to a primary opponent. That's why the words like moderation and compromise are really, really bad, bad words in Madison today, in the capital today, not the city of Madison. Mm-hmm.
Tom, thanks for that call. Let's move now to Fawn in Madison. Hi, Fawn.
Hi. I just want to say I really honestly agree with everything your guests are saying. And I really want to commend you and really thank you for your courage and speaking out about it. I don't know all that much about Cullen, but I've been following Schultz in when he was in office, and I really take my hat off to so much of what you've done and as a legislature and I would say a statesman, because you've been voting your conscience and speaking out about what you see as political and democratic injustices, and of which this is one. I think this is some of the biggest news to happen in 2016, and the fact that the court did decide to find gerrymandering, I think that is proper, and I know that it needs to be rectified. Thank you so much, so we can really pursue a true democracy and let each citizen's voice be heard. Thank you very much.
Fawn, thanks so much for that call, and Senator Schultz, would you like to respond?
Well, I guess I just want to say thank you. It's very nice to hear those kind words, and they're much appreciated. But I think what's important here is our democracy, our relationship to that democracy as citizens. And, you know, as Senator Cullen has mentioned several times, well, the lawsuit may have been filed in Wisconsin, and we're talking about a Republican gerrymander. The fact is you only have to go south of our state border to Illinois to see the opposite effect with Democrats in charge doing the same thing. You don't have to go all the way out to Rhode Island. And if we really want to solve problems, we need to get people together. That means we need to break down the extreme partisanship. We need to encourage people in the legislature to do their own thinking, to listen to their own constituents, and be sensitive to what their constituents are saying. It's just frightening and shocking to me each time I hear people when I'm out and about say to me, Bill, my legislator has told me to my face that I can't touch him or her, and so just get over it. You know, that isn't helpful. And if we truly want to have good governance in our state and in our nation, then we have to make some real fundamental reforms, and not the kind of reforms that advantage a political party or ideology, but reforms that will make the process fair for everyone so we can get back to having a real contest of ideas.
Let's go back to the phones, and Wayne in Marshfield is up next. Hello, Wayne.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm a former social studies teacher and I'm passionate about this. And I think Iowa has a program where, I don't know if it's three judges on a panel that do the redistricting. However it's done, if on a national basis every state put some people in a pool, and if you do it by three people, that one from your state and one from each of two neighboring states, do it so it's not the politicians. And secondly, whoever draws the lines should have the county lines, the precinct lines, and the populations. And that's it. They should have no access to where Democrats or Republicans, what the history, voting history is in these precincts.
And thanks for that call, Wayne. I want to give the senators a chance to respond. Senator Cullen, is that a model that you're familiar with?
Very familiar with it. Dale and I have held hearings on that. The model in Iowa, it isn't three judges. It's simply the civil servant, the county, the state employee, who draws drafts all the other legislation that the Iowa legislature considers, also drafts the legislative maps. And he or she cannot consider the political makeup of a particular area. If you see a map of Iowa, all you see is right angles because they keep political jurisdictions intact, counties intact. That's where Dale and I want to go. But this legislature that's in place today with this gerrymandered map is not going to adopt the Iowa plan. That's why we're trying to get, for the 2018 election, have federal judges who have drawn maps before in Wisconsin draw the 2018 election map and the 2020 map. And then following the census in 2021, after the 2020 census, hopefully the legislature will then adopt the Iowa-type plan. That's Dale and I's long-term goal, is to get a plan like Iowa, not to have a federal judge draw the maps forever. Mm-hmm. This is just a short-term solution to an unconstitutional problem.
So, and Judith, I want to point something out to you. The Iowa plan was created under Republicans, a Republican governor, Republican both houses of the legislature. Since it's been implemented, nobody has even introduced a bill to repeal it. It's so popular. And I think that's terrific. And one of the key things about the Iowa model is complete transparency. As Senator Cullen pointed out, you have a civil servant draw the map with very limited things that they can consider, and then everyone sees the maps at the same time, both houses, both political parties, and that means that that partisan leaders can't sort of curry favor with individual legislators by giving them this part of the district they want, or putting people together if they don't like folks, or whatever shenanigans that go on. It's that transparency is very important. So, yes, as Tim said, that's our ultimate goal. And we didn't start out with a fair elections project. We just decided in our final terms that we were going to do something for the people of Wisconsin, and we knew it wouldn't be popular in the building, but we sure have figured out that it's very popular as you talk to the people of Wisconsin once you get away from the Capitol.
And Senator Cullen, we have just a few seconds left. We will thank you both for joining us, and we will definitely stay on this topic.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Senator Dale Schultz is former Republican Majority Leader of the Wisconsin Senate. Tim Cullen is former Democratic Majority Leader of the Wisconsin Senate. They are calling for state district maps to be redrawn immediately.
The teenage son of a new congressman made national news when he tried to dab during a photo his family was taking with House Speaker Paul Ryan.
Dabbing, apparently, is a move popularized by Carolina Panthers quarterback Cam Newton.
Paul Ryan asked the teenager if he was going to sneeze. He had his arm up in the air by his nose, and Ryan later tweeted that he still didn't really get what dabbing was all about.
Well, the freshman congressman / embarrassed dad later tweeted, "Just so you know, Paul Ryan, he's grounded."
I'm glad to see that Paul Ryan is also baffled by dabbing. My son came home and said everyone in his class is really into dabbing. And I say, "What is it?" And he said, "Well, it's this." And he raises his arms in the air. And I still don't get it.
Yeah.
Apparently it's a meme. It's something one does. And lots of people do it, I guess.
But it does look like the thing you're supposed to do, like sneezing into your elbow so you don't
infect
people.
A little bit, with an extra arm up in the air. I think it looks kind of like a superhero pose.
I think it looks like something Count Chocula would do. But, you know, I don't know. This is one of those times where I feel like I am hopelessly unhip and out of the loop.
I think we're too old, Judith. We just don't get it, along with Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan.
You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.